Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello and welcome once again. We come to you 7 days a week to tell you about our world as it is. We always present interesting stories at a slow speed, and we use words that are easy to understand. It's a great way to learn American English. Today we bring you medical news of a special kind from Cambodia. Then we will talk about politics in the United States. There is a town near Washington, D.C., whose leader is only 19 years old. You're going to enjoy this one. It's time to listen and learn with the Voice of America. Cambodia has some of the world's worst mental health statistics. Experts say the large number of cases is partly a result of Khmer Rouge rule in the 1970s. The Cambodian government spends little on mental health services. The World Health Organization says such services are, in its words, critically neglected. Experts do not believe that will change anytime soon, because few Cambodian students are interested in psychiatry as a career. They have little or no interest in the treatment and prevention of mental disorders. Christopher Jones Cruz reports many Cambodians must travel long distances to cities to get help, and the help they get when they arrive is little more than a brief talk and some medicine.
Most Cambodians live in rural areas, but few mental health services are provided there. So people must go to psychiatric centers in cities, like the Khmer Soviet Hospital in Phnom Penh. It is one of the busiest clinics in the country. Yem Subotra is the director of the clinic. He says that 15 years ago, it cared for between 70 and 150 patients every day. When our reporter visited recently, the daily average was 400. The clinic has just 10 psychiatrists and 10 nurses or aides. So most patients are treated for just a few minutes and leave with a bottle of pills. Dr. Yem Subotra knows medicine can help patients, but is not the only answer. He says the clinic could help people more if it had more money and other resources.
So we not much time to give good service for them, especially for psychotherapy. We just only some sort counseling sort psychotherapy to the patient.
In addition to the lack of trained mental health specialists, Cambodia does not have the newer drugs used in neighboring Vietnam and Thailand. Cambodia needs more psychiatrists, but few young people seem interested in the subject. Nationwide, just 6 students are taking the 3-year-long study program. Experts say low pay and the challenges of studying psychiatry keep many Cambodians from wanting to get training. Our reporter repeatedly asked Cambodian officials how many doctors and nurses have been trained in mental health care. But the question was never answered. The Cambodian government spends about $1 million a year on mental health services. That is much less than is needed. So it is not likely that the country's mental health care delivery system will improve anytime soon. I'm Christopher Jones-Cruz.
You are listening to the Voice of America, and we are coming to you from Washington. Now, Jonathan Evans joins us with the story of a man who has made politics his job, even though he is barely old enough to be called Mr.
Brandon Paulin is the top official in the town of Indian Head, Maryland, even though he is only 19 years old. Mr. Paulin started the job this month. He says his first goal is to bring business back to the town. The area is about 2.5 kilometers wide and sits between two rivers. About 4,000 people live there. It includes small businesses, old homes on tree-lined streets, and new townhouses along the highway. It is about an hour's drive away from the U.S. capital of Washington, D.C. But on the way into the capital, the highway passes the remains of closed businesses. The shops failed largely because of competition from shopping centers in larger cities. Mr. Paulin says when some people drive into Indian Head and see the empty buildings, they just turn around and leave. He hopes to return the town to what it used to be, a friendly, successful place with natural beauty where people want to live and visit. Many, many years ago, Indian Head was a booming town, and that's what I want to get back, he said. I want to entice businesses as much as I can, using business incentives. Right now, the people who own the old empty buildings are permitted to use their properties to reduce their taxes. Mr. Paulin wants to reverse the situation. He plans to charge owners a fee for empty buildings and to increase the cost every year. That way, he says, owners will hurry to establish a new business. Brian Lyles lives in Indian Point and does not have a job. He hopes new businesses will come soon after meeting Mr. Paulin. Mr. Lyles, who is 26, says, I think it's awesome to have a young mayor. The owner of a local health food store where Mr. Paulin buys fruit drinks is also happy about the young mayor. Kelly Murphy says, his age doesn't bother me. I know he's excited, and I feel when people get around him, we feel excited again. We've lost that for many years in this town. Mr. Paulin began participating in city politics when he was 10 years old. At that time, he urged town officials to put in signs urging drivers to be aware of pedestrians, people crossing the street on foot. Mr. Paulin succeeded. Since then, he says, he has been involved in the town government. As mayor, Mr. Paulin earns only $6,000 a year. In comparison, most U.S. legislators make an average salary of about $40,000 a year. Mr. Paulin lives at home and takes college classes online. His mother, Wendy Paulin, says her son accepts challenges and works on problems until he has a solution. Voters in small towns across the U.S. have elected several other 18- and 19-year-old leaders. But people in Dorset, Minnesota, set the record for a town's youngest mayor. Only about 25 people live in Dorset. Each year, they put all the residents' names in a hat and blindly select someone. In 2012, they chose Bobby Tufts to be their top official. Bobby was 3 years old. I'm Jonathan Evans.
If you want to learn and improve your American English skills, you have come to the right place. This is VOA, the Voice of America, and we are coming to you from Washington.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Environment and Science Report. A new study says a widely used insecticide is damaging wild bee populations. Wild bees are important because they pollinate crops and wild plants. Environmentalists in the United States and Europe say chemicals called neonicotinoids are causing a drop in the number of bees. These insecticides are among the most commonly used worldwide. Farmers often use seeds treated with the insecticides. The chemicals target insects that eat crops, and they do not spread beyond the field. But they do get into pollen and nectar, which is where the bees come into contact with them. Mai Ruloff is a researcher at Lund University in Sweden. She led the neonicotinoids study. She and other researchers studied bees in fields. Half of the fields were grown from seeds treated with neonicotinoids. The other half was grown with seeds that were not treated. She spoke about the results of the study in a video released by the journal Nature, which published it.
The most dramatic result we found was that bumblebee colonies almost didn't grow at all at the treated sites compared to the control sites.
She says there were about half as many wild bees per square meter in treated fields as in untreated ones. Dennis van Engelsdorp is an entomologist, a scientist who studies insects. He works at the University of Maryland. He was not involved with the research on neonicotinoids, but he says banning the chemicals may not be the answer. He says they are not as bad as other insecticides. He spoke to VOA on Skype.
In many cases, neonics are actually the safest alternatives. And so by banning it, what you're doing is forcing farmers to use other products that may either be just as bad or worse.
He says farmers often use the chemicals too much, and that may be hurting bees. Mr. Van Engelsdorp thinks farmers might not need to stop using neonicotinoids completely. He says the chemicals should be used more sensibly, or in other words, only when necessary. The same chemicals are thought to be linked to a problem with European honeybees, the bees kept by farmers to pollinate crops. The problem is called colony collapse disorder. The worker bees from a beehive or colony suddenly disappear. Farmers do not see the dead bees around the hive. A United States Department of Agriculture report included information about the effects of neonicotinoids. It said the chemicals make the bees more likely to become sick. The bees cannot fight the viruses that commonly affect them. And that's the VOA Learning English Environment and Science Report. I'm Marcia James.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember.
I want to say to you that for the next 4 years, there'll be a Democrat in the White House and you're looking at him.
Presidential elections are exciting events in American politics. Few elections for the White House have been as exciting as the one in 1948. And few have had such surprising results.
This is NBC Television.
We have obtained the results from the state of Ohio, which assures victory for President Truman and Senator Barkley. With Ohio's 25 electoral votes, President Truman and Senator Barkley will have a total of 266 votes in the Electoral College. This is the minimum figure necessary for victory.
Four candidates were nominated for president in the 1948 election. One was the man already in the White House, the candidate of the Democratic Party, President Harry S. Truman. Truman had been the party's vice presidential candidate with Franklin Roosevelt in 1944. When Roosevelt died a year later, Truman became president. He was the one who made the decision to drop atomic bombs on Japan to end World War II. But Truman did not do well during his first few months in office. He made several serious mistakes. He had trouble with the economy and organized labor. His party lost control of the Senate and the House of Representatives in the congressional elections of 1946. Most Americans had little faith in Truman's ability as a leader. They expected that he would lose the presidential election in 1948 if he chose to be a candidate. President Truman did choose to run. He took several strong steps to show his leadership in the months following the Democratic defeat in the congressional elections. Truman called on Congress to pass a number of laws to help black people. He took firm actions in his foreign policy toward the Soviet Union. These included the Marshall Plan and the Berlin Airlift, as we discussed in our last two programs. And he began to speak out with much more strength to the American people. Truman succeeded in winning the presidential nomination of the Democratic Party. He chose Alban Barkley, a senator from Alabama, for vice president. Senator Barkley and I will win this election and make these Republicans like it. Don't you forget that, Truman declared in accepting the nomination. The Republicans nominated New York State Governor Thomas Dewey. Dewey was a wise and courageous man. He was also very serious. Truman campaigned by telling the voters that Dewey did not understand the needs of the average American. He called Dewey a candidate of rich people. One day, Dewey got angry at a railroad engineer because his campaign train was late for a speech. Truman said this proved that Dewey did not understand the problems of railroad engineers and other working Americans. He tried to make the election a choice between hard-working Democrats and rich Republicans. Two other men also were candidates for the presidency. Both were from newly created parties. One was Strom Thurmond from South Carolina. He was a candidate of the States' Rights Democratic Party, also known as the Dixiecrat Party. Most of his supporters were white people from the southeastern part of the country. They opposed giving full rights to black people. The other candidate was Henry Wallace of the Progressive Party. His supporters believed that Truman had turned away from the progressive ideas of Franklin Roosevelt. Both Thurmond and Wallace had broken away from the Democratic Party. Most political experts believed these two candidates would take votes away from President Truman. They believed the Republican Dewey would surely win the election. President Truman did not have strong public support. But Harry Truman was a fighter. He did not believe the election was lost. He took his campaign to the American people.
On election day, the president, the Congress, the governor, the mayor, all cease as the government. You are the government, because then you decide what sort of a government you want. And when you do like you did in 1946, when two-thirds of you stayed home, you get just what you deserve. You got that good-for-nothing 80th Congress.
He said he had always campaigned by going around, meeting, and talking to people. Running for president was no different, he said. He just got on a train and started across the country to tell people what was going on. He wanted to talk to them face to face. When you stand there in front of them and talk to them, he said, the people can tell whether you are telling them the facts or not.
If you give the Republicans complete control of this government, you might just as well turn it over to the special interests, and we'll start on a boom and bust cycle and try to go through just what we did in the 20s and end up with a crash, which in the long run will do nobody any good but the communists.
Truman campaigned with great energy. He made hundreds of speeches as his train crossed the country. It became known as the Whistle Stop Campaign because it stopped at some of the smallest towns and villages in the country. Truman gave speeches from the back of his campaign train, the Ferdinand Magellan. He spoke to farmers in Iowa. He visited a children's home in Texas. And he discussed issues with small groups of people who came to visit his train when it stopped in rural areas of Montana and Idaho. Dewey and the Republicans laughed at Truman's campaign. They said it showed that Truman needed votes so badly that he had to spend his time looking for them in small villages. Truman said the criticism proved that Republicans did not care for the average American. Dewey also campaigned across the country by train, but he showed little of the fire and emotion in his speeches that made Truman's campaign so exciting. Dewey's speeches were safe. One reporter wrote that Dewey was acting like a man who had already been elected and was only passing time waiting to take office. Dewey had good reasons to feel so sure of being elected. Almost every political expert in the country said Truman had no chance of winning. The Wall Street Journal, for example, printed a story about what Dewey would do in the White House after the election. And the New York Times said that Dewey would win the election by a large majority. Truman refused to accept those views. Instead, he spoke with more and more emotion against Dewey. Most Americans still believed that Truman would lose, but they liked his courage in fighting until the end. One supporter shouted, "Give 'em hell, Harry," them being the Republicans. Soon, supporters across the country were shouting, "Give 'em hell, Harry." Truman made special appeals to working people, Jews, blacks, Catholics, and other traditional supporters of the Democratic Party. In his final radio speech before the election, he promised to work for peace and a government that would help all people. Then he went to his home in the state of Missouri to wait with the rest of the country for the election results. Republicans across the country greeted Election Day happily. They were sure that this was the day that the people would choose to send a Republican back to the White House after 16 years. Some of the early voting results from the northeastern states showed Truman winning. But few Republicans worried. They were sure Dewey would be the winner when all the votes were counted. The Chicago Tribune was also sure who the next president would be, declaring in a huge headline, "Dewey defeats Truman." But the newspaper was wrong. Everyone was wrong. Everyone, that is, except Harry Truman and the Americans who gave him their votes. Truman went to bed on election night before all the votes were counted. He told his assistant that he would win. He awoke early the next morning to learn that he was right. Not only did he defeat Dewey, as he thought he would, but he won by a good number of votes. And he helped many Democratic congressional candidates win as well. The Democrats captured both houses of Congress. After the results were announced, as heard in this old recording, Truman showed his sense of humor by joking about the predictions of his defeat.
I had on the National Broadcasting Company. Kelton Barn was saying, while the president is a million votes ahead in the popular vote, we have yet to hear from him. We are very sure that when the country vote comes in, Mr. Truman will be defeated by an overwhelming majority. And I went back to bed and went to sleep.
Harry Truman would make many difficult decisions as America moved into the second half of the 20th century. Truman would send American troops to help the United Nations defend South Korea against aggression from the North. He would join other Western leaders in establishing a new alliance, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. They established NATO to provide for the joint defense of Europe and North America. Truman and later presidents would make decisions to send large amounts of economic and military aid to countries around the world. Many of these decisions were necessary because of America's new responsibilities after World War II as leader of the Western world. You can find our series online with transcripts, MP3s, podcasts, and pictures at voaspecialenglish.com. And you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at VOA Learning English. I'm Steve Ember, inviting you to join us again next week for The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English.